Because if we have to be honest, if you go in IT, you still have, even as females, you still have to need some balls to get into it.
Yeah.
Because you really have to break through some barriers. On the other hand, I would love to bring this podcast to the male audience. Because we can tell women constantly they have to go in there and it is fun and you can really be yourself and it is flexible work. So, man, it's the best job to combine with kids, if you ask me.
Yeah.
And but it's also that we have to change the mindset of men.
Welcome to Women Disrupting Tech. My name is Dirk Jan Lupkes, and on this podcast, I give the women who work in tech the platform they need to inspire and empower each other. Join me on a journey into the world of entrepreneurship, funding, biases, and role models to discover the strategies for success in the tech industry. In other words, how women can disrupt tech. Are you ready to listen? Hey, welcome back to Women Disrupting Tech, and thank you for listening to episode number 50. I'm really happy that I've been able to provide a platform to 50 women who are disrupting tech with the work that they do, so they can be a role model to other women. Today's episode is about privacy in building trust. More specifically, it's about the question how you can create data-driven insights out of datasets with sensitive data that are shared between different companies, without actually sharing the sensitive data. Because that is what Martine van der Gaar's company, Linksight, helps their customers do. And I wanted to discover how that works. Therefore, we will dive into the world of decentralized computing and large data sets. Martine takes us on a journey from being a program manager at TNO to being a CEO of a tech startup that has privacy at the core of everything it does. In today's episode of Women Disrupting Tech, we'll discover how you can share sensitive customer data without risking privacy violations, what the benefits of privacy-friendly data collaborations are, and we'll learn the strengths of having a diverse team when it comes to building a complex technological solution. So when you're ready to listen and learn how to solve the privacy puzzle of data sharing between companies, please welcome to Women Disrupting Tech, Martine van der Gaar. Hey Martine, welcome to Women Disrupting Tech. Good to have you. Question I always ask at the start of the podcast is how you got into your current job or into your current position. And please go as far back as you think is functional.
Yes, well, thank you for having me, Dirk-Jan. How do I got into my current job as CEO of Linksight? I have to take you indeed a little bit back. Mm-hmm. I've been in positions involving management roles. Started as project management into program management, interim management. And at some point in my career, I thought, okay, I have three small younger kids. And I was looking for a different position where I didn't have to travel every day. Mm-hmm. And I ended up with a really great company called TNO in the Netherlands. It's the Institute for Applied Sciences. And they all do these kinds of interesting research to look into new technologies, what they can mean for us as a society. And I got involved there in a project called, it was about privacy-enhancing technologies. Mm-hmm. And we were together with organizations, public and private organizations, to see how can we make use of this technology, what kind of impact would it have. And I was there also the program manager. And during that project, somewhat we thought, well, what we're doing here is so amazing. Mm-hmm. Could we make a company out of this? Can we start our own company bringing privacy-enhancing technologies to the market?
Mm-hmm.
That has been a process of about 2 years, and about 3 years ago we decided to really give it a go. So 3 years ago, I started together with my partner. We started together Linksight. And since then, I'm the CEO of Linksight.
Okay. So just for context, TNO is a, I think it's a government organization in that sort of does a lot of research into innovation, right?
Yeah, it's the Research Institute for Applied Sciences.
Mm-hmm.
So we have the really early on science that's done by universities, academic institutes. And then you have TNO at a later stage. Okay, this where you have all these new technologies where we can really look into how can they be applied? Can we investigate what is needed for those technologies, those innovations, to really be useful for the market, to change them from technology into product?
Uh-huh. Okay. And so the development stage, the innovation stage, started at the university, if I hear you correctly, with, let's say, a theoretical exercise.
Now you have these, what they call maybe prototype readiness levels.
Uh-huh.
And it goes from 1 till 10. And indeed, you have the really early on 1, 2, 3, which is more the academic state.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have 4, 5, 6, that it's usually more the area where TNO focuses on.
Okay. And Linksight is a spin-out of TNO.
We are an official TNO spin-off company, yes.
Okay, yeah. So you have quite a bit of background, I read on LinkedIn at TNO. Also in building these solutions to share data. How does that background help you to take the product to a level that it's actually can be commercialized?
Well, it helps me that with my background, I've been, I've worked in my consultancy career a lot for other companies.
Uh-huh.
And I got to know how do these companies operate, what is important to them. If you adopt a new innovation or product, how can you make that integrate with the rest of your suite that you already have as a company?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That helped me in my company to look at, from a product perspective, what is needed for our clients to adopt and make this step in embracing this new innovative technology and product that we have.
Mm-hmm.
On the other hand, I'm not a technical person. I don't have a technical background, so I cannot do anything with the coding. So I leave that to my brilliant team.
Yeah.
So I think that is also what makes us stronger, that we combine and the technological skills and mindset that we have in the team, as well as the business perspective.
Yeah. Do you actually see that then also as a strong point of yourself, that you actually, the way you add value is not on the technical perspective, but on the commercial and perhaps also organizational perspective of it? Side of it?
Well, I believe it definitely helps that you have a team that covers all bases.
Yeah.
And in my current team, I'm covering that business commercially perspective. So yeah, we definitely have a good balance in our current team, and that helps.
Mm-hmm.
I think towards our clients, it also, I believe it helps that I can gap that bridge between people that want to use or wants to see the possibilities of using this new innovative product that we have, and helping them understand what it is, what it does, without having to go into the technical stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm still, I know enough to always be one step ahead.
Yeah.
On the other hand, if we have a technical guy, then of course we make the link directly with, for instance, my CTO. And they can go all the way, going all the technical.
They can cover the entire technical spectrum there.
Yes, definitely.
Okay. So before we go into the solution that you're building, maybe describe why building a data sharing functionality that allows multiple companies to share data, why is that so difficult?
Why is it so difficult? It's difficult from a lot of angles, but I think mostly has to do with trust.
Mm-hmm.
The market that we're focusing on is about private sensitive data of people. So it could be, for instance, healthcare data. And it's mm-hmm. so sensitive. You really have to trust that that the other one is taking care of your data, is doing the right stuff with you, or is using your data for the right insights that are needed, that you're mm-hmm. not misusing that kind of data. So a lot can go back to trust.
Mm-hmm.
And that is why also from, that it's sort of translated into a legal constraint,
mm-hmm.
what makes it difficult, but also from a technical IT security perspective,
mm-hmm.
it also has constraints, at least in the current way of working. Mm-hmm. And then you have our solution, which is something else, but that was for the next question.
Yeah.
Yeah, a lot comes back to trust as the main factor.
So it's about building trust. It's about meeting legal obligations and then also building something that it's technically able to deliver on the promise of that trust.
Yes.
Okay, good. So, and that's also, it already sounds maybe simple from my words, but I can assure you from my own background that it's like incredibly difficult because we had the data sharing problem even within one company from one area to the other. But what is your solution about?
Well, before I answer that, maybe for our audience, the current way of working is that companies that want to get insights out of each other's data, currently what they do is they copy their data, bring that to one organization. So you bring that all together, and that organization can do the analysis one time and gives the results back to the organizations.
Uh-huh.
That is the current way of working.
Yeah.
And that's what we call a centralized solution, because you copy all the data and bring that into one place. What we do as Linksight, we support data collaborations where they can keep control of their data themselves and only allow for the insights to be shared.
Okay.
Well, how would this work? Because I think that's the next question.
Yeah.
Everybody's thinking, well, how do they do that? Well, what we do is that each an organization that is involved in a data collaboration has the Linksight product. And the Linksight product allows them to encrypt actually the data in their own organization. So the data in their own organization within,
keys.
Whole world of their own organization, their own area, there it is encrypted. And then we create, every organization is creating a data station. Mm-hmm. And then you have the analysis question can be considered then as a train stepping by each data station and is only collecting in an encrypted form a piece of the answer.
Uh-huh.
By the end, you visit all the data stations. Then you have collected all the pieces of the answer, but still in encrypted form.
Yes.
And then all the organizations, and then still something has to happen. And then all the organizations have to work together and say, okay, this is all allowed, this is okay. And then the answer is decrypted, and then you have the final answer. So I know we started off with saying Linksight is about privacy-enhancing technologies.
Mm-hmm.
That is indeed taking care of the whole encryption, decrypting part.
Mm-hmm.
But to make it into a product, what we added is what we call data collaboration governance.
Mm-hmm.
That is giving organizations the opportunities to set rules. Who am I collaborating with? What is the other organization allowed to ask me? Which kind of data are they allowed to analyze? and lots of other different rules. That's too much for this podcast.
Yeah.
But and there's actually a working product and a working solution.
Okay. But what I'm hearing, actually, let me test a couple of assumptions here, because there's this train that is passing all these stations, collecting information, and then all that information, by the way, then still encrypted with a local key. So do I understand correctly that the rails on which the train is running is actually the governance that makes sure that people can actually trust each other, because they know upfront, if I deliver this data, it will be only used for purposes XYZ?
Yes.
Okay. So that to me rings a bell of blockchain. That you actually, or so blockchain type technology, that you actually sort of codify, for lack of a better word, how data is used upfront. Is this similar? Is this different?
Well, what a blockchain is really, really good at is that everybody has the same. The same view of the truth.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody agrees, okay, this is the state we're in, this is our reality.
Yeah.
And that's something that we also have in our product, but not using blockchain technology, but we have the same kind of functionality. So that indeed, that if you are in a collaboration together with multiple organizations, that we all confirm these are the rules on which we collaborate, and we all agree to that this is a set of rules.
Mm-hmm.
So that kind of functionality is that you also find within blockchain technology. We have as well, but supported by different technology, not using a blockchain. Same as that we also support with, to build upon the trust that we started with.
Mm-hmm.
We create this audit log where organization can see who did what kind of analysis, who asked which kind of question, using which kind of data to use, looking for, okay, was the outcome successful, yes or no? All these kind of events are logged so that everybody can always look back, hey, what happened in this data collaboration and what has changed over time?
Okay, so it's also traceable and transparent.
Yes, definitely, because we believe that helps us build trust that is needed to be in these data collaborations.
Yeah, I think that's...
But maybe to give you a brief example, because it's all
still
technology, we have examples, for instance, where it is, you have a hospital and it's providing a new innovative treatment. It's an example is inflammatory bowel disease, and that can also... patients can be helped by the support of an app. Not only visiting the doctor once in a while, but during their activities, during the day at home, they get the support of this app. Well, it's a new treatment, and the hospital invested in it. And then it is the insurance company. Then the question is, can they reimburse this app?
Yeah.
Well, the big question is here, is the app itself, is this new innovative treatment indeed being effective, yes or no? Well, we have the organizations, on the one hand, the hospitals, on the one hand, the insurance companies, which are not allowed to share all this data. So what they are using, these kind of solutions that we have, where the hospital can say, okay, these are the patients indeed getting those innovative treatments using the app. And the insurance company can also validate, okay, for these patients, without knowing exactly who is using what, can we see a shift in cost? Can we see that the costs are indeed, the healthcare costs declining for the hospital? Or because can we also see that, on the other hand, that, for instance, the costs of these patients that are using the app is making sure for an increasing cost for a general practitioner.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not just looking at only what is happening in the hospital, but also from a broader perspective. That was not possible before, but it is with these kind of solutions like we have.
Okay, and then it becomes like really, because they actually share the identity of the people, but the insurance company cannot see individual cases.
Now we do have to get a bit legal, technically, actually. Most cases were not allowed to share an identity because that's also protected. So what we do is, there are different ways of creating a identity. You can also take still a few attributes of a person. And that could also be transformed into an identifier, as we call them. With extra security measures, because we add salt and hash it, it's like that.
So how did you take privacy into the consideration when building this? Because there's a lot of trust built by not sharing data that is not supposed to be shared.
Yes. Well, privacy is always top of mind. Indeed, knowing that the insights, whether a treatment is effective or not, or for better, for whom this treatment is effective or not, is a valuable insight.
Yeah.
So you want to support this kind of research. And the challenge that we had when developing our solution was indeed, what are the prerequisites needed? So what it is from a security perspective, how can we protect that privacy, and also what is needed from a legal perspective? And actually only the last step is, okay, and how can we make this work so that the people in an organization can really use it during their day-to-day operations? It has been constantly on our mind. It's actually what we do.
Yeah,
it's what we kind of breathe in every day.
Yeah, it's an essential part, I think. But what I'm hearing you say is quite interesting, I think, is that you don't necessarily take the user as a first starting point. What do they want out of it? It's part of the equation for sure. But you start by, okay, how can we first develop the technology in a way that it's, let's say, privacy supporting, and then think of, okay, how can we plug in the functionality in it? Is that correct?
Yeah, that's definitely correct. There's a lot to say that, of course, the current way of working, it has worked for years. It was considered safe for years, but the opinion is changing, and we wanted to see how we can do it differently. And indeed, we started with how can we protect from the beginning in 100% way that privacy. And then the second step is, okay, we can develop something, but also users have to be able to use it in the day-to-day operations.
Yeah.
So indeed, you also have to make that part of the equation as well.
Yeah.
But it definitely... No, not compromising privacy.
Yeah.
Privacy is key, and that is, that's our blood. That's also why we want to do this, to really make a change in the impact for privacy.
Okay. So this is like, as we've been describing it, it's incredibly complex technology or a complex solution to build. How does because you have quite a diverse team, I think, not only white cis men, let's say. So how does diversity help you build this?
Diversity helps in bringing in different perspectives. I think that's the main part. But you can still have many different backgrounds, etc. But you also need to have the culture where people believe that they can speak up and say something that is different what has been said before. So
how
that,
do you do
yeah.
that?
Well,
create that culture.
Yeah, created culture. Well, we have set our values at the beginning, and one of them is transparency. We want to be as transparent as possible. That's also something that's reflected in our product. And yeah, you have to live by these values. So we have to speak up and challenge others as well to speak up. So if somebody hasn't said something about a certain topic, then we start asking, but what is your opinion? Because we really value somebody else's opinion as well.
Yeah, also so actively also be getting people engaged in meetings and in... So let's say that one of my female listeners would like to learn more about this or get an education maybe into this. Where would you recommend her to go?
Yeah, well, contact me, of course. You can find me on LinkedIn. You can also find me on my link site. My email address is not that difficult.
Okay.
So yeah, please reach out. I believe in helping each other. I think if we help each other, the world will be a much better place. And if you really want to have education, then yeah, I think my co-founder, my CTO, Maarten, he's one of the best. And that's also a reason why the University of Twente is very happy to have him one day a week as assistant professor.
Okay.
You can really engage students to make them enthusiastic about this great, but also indeed complex topic.
Okay. So I have two questions remaining. One is in diversity. Yeah? Just go circling back to that topic for a minute. In the field where you are in, so privacy and multi-party computing, are there more or less women than general in tech, or is it even, let's say, worse? Less women than in general. It's 20% in general,
well,
I think.
Again, if I have to go by the figure, seeing who's taking the class of my co-founder, my CTO, Maarten, then I believe there are less women in cryptography than in general IT. So it's really a niche still. I hope it will change over time, of course. We need more women.
Why do you think that is, by the way?
If I knew that, then maybe the solution would also be a whole lot easier. Not sure. It's I don't know. It's we ask some of them, but I think you also have to be up for the challenge. You have to like doing these kind of analytical puzzles, because that's actually what we do all day, solving really difficult puzzles.
But do you think it's is this sort of taught, or are women not educated to go into this field, or is it?
Well, women are definitely smart enough to go into this field. I think it's still struggling with the agent image there is of women, that you still have to free yourself from those traditional expectations. And even for myself, and I speak for myself, I still have to deal with that day-to-day basis. If I run into people and I have to explain, oh, I'm an entrepreneur, and do you still have time for the kids then? Or, a tech company, I still get all the traditional remarks. I still get them time to time. And so
it's strange,
still need a lot of women to change that image.
Yeah, we need more women to do that for sure. Because, so that's a beautiful entry into my final question for you. So I have an arrangement with Jacqueline van den Ende, one of my previous guests, to make this podcast obsolete by 2032, which involves making women in tech normal, so that they don't get all these remarks about, how do you do that with the kids? And do you have time for grocery shopping then? And what does your husband think of this? If we want to get that done, what would be your advice to do that, from speaking from your own experience?
I would love to go to like high schools before people select their education to go into a certain profession. I really would love to go to those schools and have women experience that working in IT is so much more than just coding. There's so many different kind of roles, but especially that it is fun. It is fun in doing these kind of, making those kind of puzzles. I always compare it to making puzzles. Everybody loves to puzzle. Yeah. You did it as a kid. Also, all the females. And it's not much different like we do today. So I really want to enthusiasm that group to make that bold move to go into IT. Because if we have to be honest, if you go in IT, you still have, even as females, you still have to need some balls to get into it.
Yeah.
Because you really have to break through some barriers. On the other hand, I would love to bring this podcast to the male audience. Because we can tell women constantly they have to go in there and it is fun and you can really be yourself and it is flexible work. So, man, it's the best job to combine with kids, if you ask me.
Yeah.
And but it's also that we have to change the mindset of men. So really bringing this podcast, for instance, to men. I once had this women leadership course, which was brilliant. It was really brilliant. And even though I was already in a leadership position, I heard some things there that were even I didn't thought of, that it was so worse with how men dominate our society. Mm-hmm. But there we said, actually, men should take the women leadership course, because we have to, not only stimulate women, but also have to change something by the dominating male part.
Yeah. Like, besides taking the female leadership course, what else can men do to allow women in?
What can they do? Well, first of all, for those who still make the stupid remarks, don't ask about indeed who's doing the grocery shopping or who's taking care of the kids. That is so old school, so not done anymore. So I think it is also by making women feel welcome that they are appreciated. I think it starts with them. So they feel like, okay, I can do something here. I'm feeling welcome. And they can also share that with their group of females, so we can spread the word that IT is a great place to be.
Yeah, it definitely is. Sounds like a great place to wrap. Thank you very much for the conversation. Last question, you already hinted a bit on it. Where can people learn more about you and about Linksight?
Yeah, well, you can go to our website. It's linksight.ai. That's there you can find all the information about Linksight. And you can find me on LinkedIn as well. You can send direct messages as well. I always respond. So,
Martina, thank you very much for this conversation. Really enjoyed it. And listeners, of course, will take all the links you can find in the show notes on Women Disrupting Tech blog. With that, thank you very much for listening and hope you have a great day. Well, that's a wrap. Thank you for listening to episode 50 of Women Disrupting Tech with Martina van der Gaar about how to use privacy as a tool to enable sharing of sensitive data between companies. Martina and I hope that you've enjoyed our conversation as much as we did, and we hope that we've managed to keep the complexity to a minimum. To learn more about Martine and her work at Linksight, feel free to connect with her via the links in the show notes. And as usual, you can find the show notes at womendisruptingtech.blog. On the same website, you can also become a member of the Women Disrupting Tech community. And as a member, you get exclusive access to Women Disrupting Tech events, and you're the first to learn when new episodes or blogs come online. When you're looking for a role model to inspire your own hero's journey into tech, check out one of the 49 other episodes of Women Disrupting Tech on Spotify, Apple, and Goodpods. And if you're a regular listener, would you consider giving the show a rating or a review, please? That way you help other people discover the podcast. Now, if you're a male ally and you want to help Martine and the 49 other women disrupting tech make this podcast obsolete by 2032, there's a simple thing you can do. Please share the podcast with friends, family, and coworkers, because this way you give my guest the platform they need to make it happen. Finally, if you want to connect with me, you can reach out to me via email, dirkjan@womendisruptingtech.blog, or you can reach out on LinkedIn. On LinkedIn, just look up my name and you'll find me. With that, I wish you a wonderful day. I hope to see you in the next episode. And in the meantime, keep being awesome.